Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Continuing, chapter 26, and if I'm not mistaken, we got as far as 22. Which is the final verse of what Gargamuni said, the name-giving ceremony prediction, which begins with Tasmat, therefore. O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayana, Narayana Sama. His transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayana. Thus, you should not be astonished by his activities. And the purport of this verse, Nanda here reports to the cowherd men the concluding remarks of Gargamuni, who spoke at the secret birth ceremony of Lord Krishna. So, we ended by, yesterday morning, by reading the commentaries from the equivalent verse in chapter 8 of Canto 10. And I want to continue from there. Gargamuni is a very special person in Krishna's pastimes. We hear from the story of King Muchukunda. King Muchukunda? No? King Muchukunda, when Krishna ran from the battlefield and he ran into the cave, King Muchukunda was in the cave and Kaliyavana, who was chasing him, got cindered by King Muchukunda because King Muchukunda was woken up. Kaliyavana thought it was Krishna. He kicked him. He opened his eyes and was turned to ashes. That's King Muchukunda. So the story of King Muchukunda, of how he became Krishna's devotee, was he heard from Gargamuni that you will see Krishna, and he is like this, and when some, not a birth ceremony, but his chart was being read by, so Gargamuni was celebrated. Nanda Maharaj selected Gargamuni to do the name-giving ceremony because he is so celebrated. In the Yadu clan or dynasty, he had that speciality. He was known. And it's for that reason that Nanda felt best to have the name-giving ceremony done in a secluded place. And it was appropriately selected. A secluded place was a cowshed for Krishna's birth. Very appropriate. Or name-giving ceremony. There's, it's important. He's an important person. The pastime is an important pastime. The words that he spoke are important words. We're hearing not only Nanda Maharaj knew, even the person he's speaking to, they knew, and the whole of the Brijvasis knew. Kind of like, who is Krishna? Topic. A significant part of their sense of who is Krishna topic connected to Garga Muni's words. And we've been hearing some, and hearing, we'll hear some more. Like one of the mentions that we heard already is there were pastimes of Krishna where resident of Vrindavan were addressing Krishna by names of pastimes that hadn't even yet happened. Or speaking of him as Mukunda or Madhusudana, they would speak of him in those terms, and it was with reference to Garga Muni's words, like people just hovered around those words. It was like a compass and helped them get some direction of directing their spontaneous loving feelings towards Krishna. And in Gauralila, there's a similar, different, but similar pastime. Not the birth pastime specifically, but during Nimai Pandit's youth, as a mischievous, apparently overly proud Brahmana teacher, went to the marketplace and did different things with different people. And so one of the persons he visited was an astrologer, and sat down and requested the astrologer to do his chart. And the astrologer said, I have to chant my mantra and meditate on the Supreme Lord and come back after some time and I'll tell you what your chart says. Because he was not just, anyway, he was a qualified person. From what I understand, this is anecdotal, but one of the gifts that Prahladananda Swami has is astrology. I mean, don't send him your birth information because he's probably too busy to do your chart. But he told me that there was a Hispanic doctor that I was seeing in New York, and the Hispanic doctor had some connection with astrology. So he had invited Prahladananda Swami to read some charts and, you know, give a talk on how to read charts. So something like that. And the persons in that little assembly wasn't a big hall or anything. People that like, you know, kind of esoteric, really into astrology charts type of people. He read a couple of charts or two or three or whatever, and they were amazed at the accuracy and the detail and stuff. And their question to him was, you know, how do you get that skill? And his answer was, there's rules of astrology, but something that's more important is the inspiration from Super Soul.
There's rules
of astrology, but something in order to be more important,
you have to be Krishna conscious.
The inspiration from anything.
There's rules
of astrology, but something in order to be more important,
some people cooking is better.
It's not even good anything.
There's rules
of astrology, but
something in order to be more important,
some people cooking is better.
It's not even good anything.
There's rules
of
astrology.
But something in our house that is drawn to the just astrologer, something that is in the chair of rules, at least he has astrologership of the something in our house that is drawn to the just astrologer, something that is in the chair of rules, at least he has astrologership of the something in our house that is drawn to the just astrologer, something that is in the pastime of the forms of the Lord after forms of the Lord after forms of the Lord after forms of the Lord. And he was overwhelmed at what he saw. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back smiling, saying, you know, so please tell me, what did you see in your meditation? And I forget exactly what the astrologer said. I didn't look it up before coming for class. But, you know, something like something wonderful. Something like that. And Garga Muni said, he has many names and many previous lives, but, you know, most people don't understand, but I can understand. So he didn't disclose all those things, and nor did Nanda Maharaj pry and say, you know, please tell me more about my son's past lives and his names. At least there's no record of his asking those further questions. But the chapter is Wonderful Krishna. So again, the theme is astonishment, a secondary rasa, inspiring the elders to ask Nanda Maharaj, who is this boy? And his affection for us and our affection for him is over the top. So can you explain all this? So he's giving Garga Muni's words, and we heard in previous commentaries how he understood those words. Essentially, he understood those words that Krishna was his son, and Krishna was empowered by potencies of Narayan to give protection to the citizens of Vraja, their Brijvasis, and that Nanda should therefore give special protection to a son. Now, if he has potencies like Narayan, he doesn't need protection from his father, but he's nurturing his fatherly emotion and the sweetness aspect while disclosing the power aspect so that he won't be, you should not be astonished by his activities. This Maya, though they're all astonished, but Nanda is a little more composed than the cowherd men. So now I want to go to continue commentary related to this text 22, and it comes up again. I mean, the words of Garga Muni come up again when Uddhava. So we heard some question: why did Nanda Maharaj go back to Vrindavan? Did he understand Krishna was the son of Vasudeva Devaki? What was his understanding? He understood Krishna as his son. And because Garga Muni had said, use those words. I mean, that was his mood, and it was confirmed by Garga Muni, etc. Then he went back because Krishna said, I'll come soon. A few more days. Everyone in Vrindavan will miss you, and carry the message, I'll come back soon. And his message that I'll come back soon, we find out from Rupa Goswami's writing and from Sanatana Goswami's writing, that is Vidagdha Madhava, Lita Madhava, and Brihat Bhagavatamrita, we hear Krishna's promise, I'll come back, there was a purpose. I'll come back shortly, was
to sustain their lives. Because if there was no hope that Krishna could come back or would come back, they would not be able to sustain their lives. So it was purposeful. So Ananda returned. And the love of the residents of Vrindavan, the omniscient Krishna knew very well the love of the residents of Vrindavan, as they were, this word that's used by our acharyas is possessiveness, not in a material sense, but in a spiritual sense. He is their only shelter, and they're very possessive of that relationship. And then Krishna feels possessiveness towards them. So he's off in Mathura, but he's feeling their feelings because he's in their hearts and they're in his heart. So he sent Uddhava. There was one of the purposes of the ostensible purpose was to pacify the gopis with a letter. Krishna wrote a letter. And before he went to visit the gopis, he appropriately went to visit Nanda Maharaj. So I'm just going to read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the conversation between Nanda and Uddhava. And it makes reference to text 22. From chapter 26. This is chapter 46, verse 45. Though the entire night passed in discussion, Uddhava could not pacify Nanda and Yashoda, nor get them to accept his vice. Then Nanda considered things in this way. This is commentary, not text. Quote, Uddhava wants to enlighten us by saying that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Do we not know that? At Krishna's name-giving ceremony, I heard Garga Muni say, your son will be equal to Narayana in qualities indeed. Who else is there more equal to Narayana than Krishna? Therefore, from Garga we learned that our son is Narayana. Besides that, we also personally experience our son to be Narayana when he killed Putana, Agha, and Bakha, lifted Govardhan Hill, stopped the forest fire, and made the ruler of Varuna Loka offer respects. Certainly I realize that Krishna is Narayana, the Supersoul, and the Supreme Brahman. Nevertheless, nothing inhibits me from thinking of Krishna as our son. The proof is Garga's words. Tasman nandot majo yam te. O Nanda, this son is yours. That was text 19 of chapter 8. Even though Krishna may be the Supreme Lord, we do not think of him as an object of worship. We simply think of Krishna as our son. Now this is a slightly different take on the commentary that we just were reading, but that's okay. We're getting an inside look by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's kindness of Nanda's heart and how he, as the leader of the Brijbasis, regards Krishna. We simply think of Krishna as our son and find satisfaction by offering him the remnants of our chewed betel nut. If he was not our son, our minds would not be satisfied. Before Krishna's birth, we could meditate on Narayana, our family deity. But now, as soon as we meditate on Narayana, Narayana appears directly in front of us. This is a sign of the satisfaction of our minds. Therefore, acting like this in relation to our son is not a fault. We are certainly Krishna's mother and father. Yogamaya. Further, Krishna's own realization in this matter is also proof that we too are his parents. We have seen many times that his face becomes sad if we don't pamper him by offering him the remnants of our chulled betel nut, lift him on our laps, embrace him, kiss him, and so forth. If Yashoda were not his mother, how could she tie him up when he broke the yogurt pots? Seeing him unhappy on being tied up, I freed him, and he smiled with happiness. Because we are his parents, Krishna accepts our scolding, commands, and even our tying him up, though he may be the Supreme Lord. If it was not a fact that we are Krishna's parents, then how could the Supreme Personality, the all-pervading Absolute, become bound up by us? By now, after Krishna had killed Chanura, Kamsa, and others in Mathura, everyone is telling him, "Oh, Krishna, you are certainly the Supreme Lord." Moreover, he tells Krishna, "I am your mother." And Vasudev tells him, "I am your father." Others say, "We're your parental uncles." And yet others tell Krishna that if they are, that they are his brothers, relatives, and friends. Because it's the Yadu clans to have their headquarters, at least at that time, in Mathura. Whenever they try to bring Krishna to their various houses by inviting him there, they simply prolong his stay in Mathura. Then our son, the crest jewel of proper conduct, looks at their faces and falls further into a terrible trap. Being incapable of returning to his braja because of his benevolent nature, I suppose Krishna told everyone, quote, "Indeed, I am the Supreme Lord, the creator of the universe. Who can be my mother? Who can be my father? Who can be my relative? Just look in all the scriptures, and you will see that I belong only to that person who renders devotional service to me, and no one else. Only to his house will I go, and he alone is my father and other relations." Nanda Maharaj continued to contemplate. Quote, "But this Uddhava is simply a child. Even though he may be very intelligent, he cannot fathom the depths of my son's heart." Taking the literal meaning of Krishna's words as if they were Krishna's real thoughts, Uddhava has come from Mathura and given us this advice. "My son has cleverly spoken, quite correctly, that he who renders devotion to me is my father, and in his house I reside. Therefore, I am sending this message with Uddhava to Krishna. My dear Krishna, I have devotion for your lotus feet. Be merciful and be pleased with me so that I can attain you by the devotional process of hearing, chanting about you, remembering you, and offering obeisances unto you. Receiving this message, my son will announce in the assembly of the Yadavas, 'Oh, men of the Yadu dynasty, you could not exhibit devotion to me in this place, but Nanda Maharaj is doing so. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj is my real father, friend, and beloved. I am going to his house.'" Saying this, Krishna will come here at once. At last, Nanda Maharaj forgot all these deliberations and did not send any message to Krishna, due to the influence of Sanchari Bhav, of humility, Dainya. Now, to continue the next text. Rising during the Brahma Muhurta period, the Braja Gopis lit lamps and worshipped the entrances of their homes, churned yogurt, and performed other domestic duties. Who can understand? Vishwanath can understand. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on an earlier verse from chapter 8. What Garga is saying to Nanda is this. His accepting bodies, Krishna, is done independently by his will, as if by the power of yoga. His method of worship is indicated by showing the nature of Narayana through his acceptance of different colors. In those previous times, by worship of those different forms, which are actually Krishna's expansions, Krishna attained similarity to those forms and took on those colors at the present time by worshiping Narayana directly in his blackish form. The child has become blackish also. It will be said, the text that we're discussing, Narayana Samo Gunai. This child has qualities like Narayana. Thus, his previous births were described, and Nanda, a great devotee, was satisfied. It should be understood that Krishna is also the principal name, since in this form he is fixed in his natural form with display of the highest qualities. Now, we read something yesterday from chapter 29 of Canto 10. This is dealing with the gopis. The commentary reads, Goddess Lakshmi, whose glance is sought after by the devatas with great endeavor, has achieved the unique position of always remaining on the chest of her lord, Narayana. Still, she desires the dust of his lotus feet, even though she has to share that dust with Tulsi Devi and with the Lord's many other servants. Similarly, we have approached the dust of your lotus feet for shelter, gopis to Krishna. Quote, you come from the same family as me. Why do you say that you touched my feet in response? This is Krishna speaking, replying to them. In response, they cover up their deep longing and express humility. Though attaining a place on Narayana's chest, Lakshmi desires the dust of his feet. Giving up her desire for service as a beloved consort, she desires to serve as a servant. She accepts to dwell among the crowd of many servants, though devatas seek her glance. This example is given and is followed by its objective, which is the gopis. Just as Lakshmi aspires for Narayan's foot dust, we aspire for yours, for you are like Narayan, and they quote Garga's words. Narayana Samo Gunai. In conclusion, therefore, Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayan by his qualities, opulence, fame, and influence. You should protect this child very carefully. That this child of yours. We, the gopis, attaining qualification to be your consorts by being of good families, have surrendered to your foot dust. The glory of Narayana's and your qualities is that it makes Lakshmi and ourselves feel humble. Though attaining a position, Lakshmi desires dust from Vishnu's lotus feet, and we desire the dust from your feet. This shows the special nature of the gopis. They didn't say lotus feet. They have this intimacy mood that's different than the opulence mood of Lakshmi. This shows the special nature of the gopis in desiring the feet of their consort without great reference. Just as Lakshmi rejects all others and accepts only Vishnu as her consort during the churning of the milk ocean, we accept only you as our object of worship. this is this possessiveness and exclusive devotion of the gopis and the other residents in Vrindavan. From Krama Sandarbha, in conclusion, therefore, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayan. That's the translation. The Lord of Vaikuntha is similar to him by quality, fame, wealth, and influence, by his very nature. Be very careful to hide this auspicious attainment. Though he is similar to Narayan, he has been born as your son. Krishna Sandarbha quotes the verse and then addresses the Purvapaksha people, the critic that say, oh, wait a minute, our critic will interpret these words to mean, quote, Krishna possesses wonderful exalted qualities just as Narayan does. Because Gargacharya compared Krishna to Narayan, our critic will have it that Krishna must be an expansion of Narayan. Actually, however, these words mean, quote, Narayana, the ruler of Vaikuntha, possesses transcendental qualities almost equal to the most exalted qualities present in Lord Krishna. Gargacharya's intention in speaking these words was to compare Narayana to Krishna, not to say that Krishna is so wonderful that he possesses great qualities just like Narayan does. It's the logic of making comparison, because there's the other commentary goes through it like really big detail. If you're comparing one thing to another thing, it means the thing that you're making comparison to is greater. And something that you compare to is lesser. So, here's Gopal Champu. This is Jiva Goswami speaking of Krishna's pastimes, and it's his childhood pastimes. Brahma said, from chapter 14, now we're at chapter 26, Brahma said, my mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? Gopal Champu goes on. Narayana also stated the same previously in verse 64. Garga said, our verse for this morning. According to this, we will infer as follows. Yogamaya of the Lord, worshipped by Nanda, who had no other interest than Krishna, is revealed in the scriptures. She is the Lord's Swarup Shakti, having the ability to do the impossible. The Lord gave Yogamaya, and she arranged Krishna as your son. Though she does not pay attention when Krishna is in Braja, she does not pay attention when Krishna in Braja is agitated by his devotee's affection. Krishna has her invisibly insist in the pastimes at all times, acting favorably to him. As Yogamaya cooperates with Krishna, so Maya in the material world cooperates with him also. O Nanda, though Krishna has attained cooperative Yogamaya for his pastimes, you should protect Krishna, to whom your worshipable Narayan has given power by all your powers. So I think we'll go on. There's lots more commentary. Okay. Text 23. Nanda continued. After Garga Rishi spoke these words to me and returned home, I began to consider that Krishna, who keeps us free from trouble, is actually an expansion of Lord Narayan. It's text 23. Vishwanath, I consider him to be invested with Narayan's power, who can remove our suffering. Expansion, in this case, like an empowered expansion. Yes? Shaktivesha-avatar. Jiva Goswami writes, since I am his father, from that time I consider him to be like Narayan. I speculate that he is empowered by Narayan. And Sanatan Goswami writes, since I am his father, from that time I consider him to be like Narayan. Nanda became absorbed in Garga's statements, though he changed the words Gopayasva to Tat Karmasit Karmasu. The meaning was finally the same. His words were the same as Garga's words. That is to say, when he spoke to the Brijbasi cowherd man, what's in chapter 8 is slightly different in chapter 26, just that little bit, but the meaning is the same. You know how you repeat something and it's not verbatim? So, and sometimes it gets changed altogether. By producing faith, he hoped to eliminate their astonishment. Garga spoke and went home. This was concluded long ago, and thus Nanda did not have to worry about the problem now. Shukadev has also mentioned the same conclusion. Nanda shows his profound nature and deliberation to instill faith in the cowherds. Though Krishna was actually superior to Narayana, he is said to be similar, or to be his anksha, to increase in affection. His real position of power is hidden. I consider him to be some part of Narayan or some special great person with similar qualities. Though he is my son, I think of him as a part of Narayan to respect the words of Garga. Not only out of respect to Garga do I think like this, but I also experience it. Krishna performs astonishing activities without suffering. Okay. So, The pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan are profound and very attractive, and the hearts and the minds are pleased just by hearing. While we're just reading and discussing like this, that like the world just went somewhere. Whatever, you know, stuff we have to deal with, just like poof. And you know, then okay, now it's for those of you that are in some remote place, here in Chicago it snowed last night, maybe 2 inches. You know, April 17th, 2 inches of snow last night. So wherever you are, you know, be glad you're not in Chicago. But by hearing pastimes of Krishna, it carries you beyond wherever you are. And there's this nice description in the beginning of the chapter 2 of Canto 3, where Vidura meets with Uddhava, and he starts asking about Krishna, and Prabhupada's comment is not just he lost external consciousness, but he was with Krishna. He went to be with Krishna. His contemplation was so intense. Not only he was in samadhi and like not in touch with the outer world, but specifically he was with Krishna. And he wants to be with Krishna, and he was with Krishna. But he's also a servant of Krishna. And here's Vidura, who's dear to Krishna. And Uddhava's thinking himself in, as Vaishnavas naturally do, in a humble mood. So he was thinking of Vidura as his elder and the superior. So he wanted to be of service to Vidura. So he struggled and struggled and struggled, and somehow came back to external consciousness, or half external consciousness. And in a string of verses described his sorrow at Krishna's departure, but not just his sorrow at Krishna's departure, his feelings of love for Krishna, and when Krishna exhibited pastimes that made him be considered by materialistic people that he was just an ordinary person like everybody else, maybe, you know, a gifted but an ordinary person, that would give him great pain because he saw Krishna in the way that he saw Krishna, and, you know, the absolute truth personality of Godhead. He knew that. He saw that. That was his mood. He was a Dwarakavasi. And now we're hearing of the Vrijvasis. And when Uddhava went to visit them, he was sharing his perspective. He's the personality of Godhead. Didn't pacify their hearts. It was well intended, but so he has this special way of adjusting everything, and then forgets being again overwhelmed by. So he's the head of the cowherds. He has qualification. He's not just like, you know, an elected official that doesn't have qualification or something, like modern times. But he had the qualification to be their leader. And he had analytical capacity and intellectual capacity and all of that. And he's hearing the words of Garga, we heard how he processed all of that. It's a little different and a little detailed, but the bottom line is, he's our son, boss. He has powers, okay. He's our son. And we have to protect him. The parental affection with natural and spontaneous love. That's their mood. Very exalted. So let's see if there's some discussion. It's already almost 8 o'clock. From our socially distanced, more than 6 feet apart, by the way, for those of you that are worried about this, at least 8 feet, maybe 10. Go ahead. Button. Okay.
So Krishna, when he comes with all the associates. So does that, like, all the associates are all the demigods as well, or like how about Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva? They don't come, and Lord Indra. So how? Who are the associates?
There's different categories. So when Krishna comes, he brings his eternal associates, and there are it's a little subtle and difficult to understand. I find it a little difficult to understand. But as you recall, when the demigods went to the shore of the Milk Ocean and petitioned Krishna to appear, or Vishnu to appear, he told them, take birth. So they took birth, according to our Acharya's explanation. Partial expansions of them entered into bodies of those who were taking birth around the time of Krishna's pastimes. So, at the conclusion of Krishna's pastimes, Jiva Goswami details, after killing Kalanemi, Shishupal and Kalanemi, he was at the gate of Mathura, Jiva Goswami explains, and gives details of scriptural references, and even, anyway, he accepted the attire of a cowherd boy instead of a king, and entered into Vrindavan, stayed there for 2 weeks, and sent the partial expansions of the, he wrapped up everything. The partial expansions of the demigods went back to their abodes, because they had come at his request, and they went back. And then the other residents of Vrindavan, his Nityasiddha devotees, their physical manifestation was withdrawn. Their eternal associates, their pastimes are eternally going on, but their physical manifestation was withdrawn. His eternal associates. And then there's other categories. And, you know, the general umbrella of the other category is, for the purpose of Krishna's pastimes, there are some persons who are qualified to go back to Godhead, but they make a little pit stop. Maybe one more birth where they get trained up by the Nityasiddha devotees how to do their services. You know, the apprentice program by the Nityasiddha devotees. And then they're ready to go, you know, to Goloka. And then there's different divisions of those. Here's two divisions that are specified. The Rishi, this is amongst the gopis, the Rishi Chari gopis from the Dandak forest, they wished and they took their birth as gopis in the next life or sometime. And the personified Vedas, some of the personified Vedas wished to be in that relationship, so they were given that position also. They're not the Nityasiddha, eternal associates of Krishna who appeared along with him. They were being trained by them because of their wish to have that. But you can't receive that without that association, so they got that association. So does that answer your question? A little bit more than you expected, right?
So sometimes I feel, you know, that this is all so much detail.
Yeah.
So much, you know, like...
too much for you.
Yeah. So at my stage, then I feel like I should not go in too much of detail. And just focus right now on the short-term goal.
Well, sure. Prabhupada, this is my understanding in response to what you said. When a goal is well-defined, then it's easy to make steps to get there. Conversely, if a goal is not well-defined, it's pretty hard to make steps to get there. It's not the same. Like, let's say, whatever, some young person wants to go to India. They have a goal, you know, and then where in India and what they're going to do. But there's so many things they have to do to get that without the details of what the things are. Passport and a visa and a ticket and a whatever and a whatever, whatever. Or you want to go to college to, you know, so if you have a clear idea of career. Supposing you don't have a clear idea of career, what's the impetus to go to college? Well, all the other kids go to college. It's not the same as you have a clear goal. And then it makes the steps more firm because you have a clear goal. You're not there yet. So as with material things, let's do the spiritual thing. Love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. That's the teaching, the number one teaching that Christ gave. Great. Tell me a little bit about him. The one that I'm supposed to love God with all my heart. And so the more defined God is, the more lovable, the more it is you're able to fulfill the instruction. God is good. God is great. How good is he? How great is he? Well, he's great. Then you hear the greatness. You know, the inconceivable. Some details of the inconceivable are revealed. Details, this is your word. Details of the inconceivable are revealed. And like, I'm down here. That's inconceivable. But the inconceivable can be disclosed by the inconceivable person through his representatives. And that's, according to Rupa Goswami, those are stimulations for ecstatic love. There's this udipan. There's stimulations for ecstatic love. And there's details. It's like, you know, ecstatic love, it gets really stimulated by details, not the cognitive, but the affective. How wonderful is my Krishna? Because that's the chapter, Wonderful Krishna. I didn't think of God with all that detail. You know, it's mind-boggling. That's good. It's not like it's meant that you just like get your mind around it and now I put it in my information basket over here. What's next? That's not the intention. Let's say, you know, like a little kid. I was, you know, before, when the coronavirus thing started, I was in Houston. And, you know, the kids didn't go to school, so they're out there playing basketball. But they were doing things playing basketball I never did when I was a kid. Like, you know, putting the basketball through their legs and, you know, without lifting their legs, just like, you know, how do they get that? From the guys that, you know, they got the role model up there. Then people didn't used to do that, but now they do that. So like, there's a goal for the little kids. And they do it like, you know, adeptly. So, you know, just even material things. So where are we going? What's the kingdom of God like? What's it like there? What do people do? What kind of loving exchanges do they have? What's in their hearts? What are they feeling? It's very attractive. I'm not there. But, you know, that's the goal. I want to go there. I mean, I don't even know what going there is like, but I want to go there. you know, aside from, you know, the people are crazy here. I don't want the crazy people. Let me out of here. Not like that. I want to be there. So as we heard from the statements of Lord Brahma, the mood of material enjoyment and the mood of liberation, they're both material. Like, I want out of here. This material, it's the flip side of the same coin. It's material. So what's the option? What's not material? What's beyond liberation? What's it like there? What do people do? I mean, a curious person will want to know. You know, a travel advertisement. Marketing. Let's go. And then the more you hear, it's like, wow. That's beautiful. How wonderful is Krishna and how wonderful it is to be in these. And then there's other devotees that feel, I'm not qualified. Uddhava, most knowledgeable Uddhava, I'm not qualified. Let me take birth as a blade of grass. I mean, we're not qualified to think like that either. But people that are qualified think like that. So, well, I'm way down here. So what's my eligibility? Well, the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So let me appreciate more the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because it's stimulating that. It's there inside somewhere, like deep inside. And I'm just struggling with day-to-day stuff. That's me. So what, you know, whoa. But there's a goal. So be a theistic person. Be a good person. Don't harm other people. You know, do good things. And what's the goal of doing good things? Well, just, you know, if you don't know, then it's, you get the fruits of being a good person. You get the fruits of piety, and then you become the enjoyer of piety. It's heaven. That's another term. So what's beyond that? What's beyond that? What's, you know, what's the goal? What's the goal? There's simple language. The goal is love of God. Okay, great. What's that? What's it like there? Well, you know, you're just a good person. That's love of God. He or she is a spiritual person because they're really good. And that's not love of God. I mean, God's maybe in the picture somewhere, but if you give his form and his pastimes and qualities, they go, no. I've had the experience. You know, really good people. No. Why no? So it's not meant for, you know, the mind to reach out there and like encompass everything, and now that's the material kinds of knowledge that we're accustomed to. The method of acquiring knowledge is, now you got, your mind's got it configured so that you can get it. This isn't that kind. It's not information. That's what the mind does. Organizes sense data and makes some pattern of it, some sensibility of it, with the assistance of intelligence. It's not that kind. It's different. The purpose is different. The end result is different. And the method is different. Just like chanting. What's attractive about chanting? It's not information. It's not fruitive. There's nothing fruitive about chanting. That's why I struggle. Because I'm with, you know, another model. The model is, this is stuff that's meant for me to be the enjoyer of, and I just have to be a religious person so I can be a religious enjoyer of stuff. This is far beyond that. That, the goal is far beyond that. And somehow you're in the association of those that are willing to give that to you. Our great acharyas and our founder acharya, and here it is. It's mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Please take it. Ooh. I'm struggling down here. Just trying to get by day to day, and you're like, whoa.
Sometimes I feel like I'm not so curious about, as you mentioned, that, you know, like, let's get out of here. Yeah,
that's okay.
Low stage.
That's okay. It's quite okay. It's quite, you know, you're not, there's something wrong with you if that's how you think. It's quite okay. It's honest to say like that. And so good. Now, wanting to get out of here, that's also material. It's the flip side of, so, like one of the questions the other day is, you know, a very honest statement, one nice devotee. You know, I just, I can't help myself, but I'd like to be comfortable. You know, like, what's wrong with wanting to be comfortable? Should I want to be uncomfortable? What's wrong? It's not wrong. That wasn't the question. But their statement was, I'm stuck there. And how do I go beyond just wanting to be comfortable? You know, the hearing and chanting process can carry one beyond even, you know, like, redefining what comfortable is. Let's say somebody has their karma is they've got lots of opulence. And they're comfortable having opulence. And if that opulence gets pinched, like is what's going on right now with coronavirus, lots of people that are used to comfort are not getting comfort. In so many levels without going into it. So now that's, what are they experiencing? Fear. Etc. Deprivation and panic and just, you know, anxiety disorders and all, who knows what's going on in the emotional level of people that want a comfortable life. And it's not comfortable anymore. And it keeps dragging on. And how long is it going to drag on? Like, I want to go back to the football and baseball games and basketball. You know, I want life to be like, you know, normal. Normal is illusion. But that's like, that's where I am. Our opportunity is wherever we are. This is one of the Brahma's verses that we discussed in the evening. Stane statuk, stay in your position. You have your psychophysical nature. Act according to your psychophysical nature. You don't have to give it up. You know, wishing to be comfortable, and it's not like trash it. You just have to start feeling uncomfortable. That's not it. You have your nature, and you act according to your nature, according to theistic conduct. That part's fine. And then just engage in the process of hearing the activities of the wonderful personality of Godhead that you don't understand. It's like way over your head, but that's okay. I have faith in that sound vibration will carry me beyond my struggle. I'm taking shelter of the sound vibration with faith that it's going to carry me beyond this position, although this is presently my position, honestly. This is my position. That's good, be honest. And then, okay, accept that that's my position. That's good, too. And then, you know, look to what the goal is. Is that attractive or not attractive? I'm way down here, but is that, so it, what are some steps from where I am to that really lofty goal that I can make? Well, you know, let's start with, you know, whatever it is that somebody can start with. Let me become vegetarian. For some people, it's become vegetarian. Okay. Good. And then offer your food to Krishna. Oh, great. And whenever somebody, what's the next step that's doable for me? Not the next person. We're not comparing ourselves to other people because that's material. Just in my relationship with Krishna, this goal that is like way up there, what's some steps that I can take? Great. Let me do those steps. You're not competing with other people or comparing yourself to other people. You're just being who you are, and you're getting, as you go further, the goal becomes more clear. It's still far out. It's still beyond the mind's ability to get wrapped around because it's in another dimension. But, you know, the clarity of what a relationship with Krishna is, what it looks like, what it feels like, what it means, and like somebody asked the question, what does it mean to be connected? This was last night, right? Last night. What does it mean to be connected? with Krishna. Is that just like the mind? The mind is thinking of Krishna. So there's the mind, it's the body, and it's the heart. So I'm not feeling so connected with Krishna right now. I'm this way down here. That's okay. What's something that can help with that connection? I mean, like a relationship with somebody. We do it in daily life all the time. Somebody over there. I think that's a nice person. I'd like to get to know that person more. So you reach out and establish some relationship. You may find out they're not what you thought they were. But with Krishna, you find out he is what the scriptures say he is. So we invest in that relationship. And that's the connection. And we're way down here. That's fine. But something that can help in that connection. Just like, you know, you're here hearing these far out things, like thinking what you just said, you're thinking like, ooh, this is too high. I'm way down here. It's okay. You have children and children, what do children understand about adult things? They don't understand, but the parents understand their children according to their capacity. There's communication and affection, and because of that affection, then they can grow as wholesome children and then, you know, teenagers and pass through that turmoil and become young adults, and that's parenting. Parents invite that. They don't expect their children to understand everything they understand. Just affection. And then nurture character, and understandings come from that too. That's what's going on. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah. Gosh, it's 20 after 8. Anything?
No.
No? Okay.
This is Radha Dutti Mataji's question. How to understand that Maharaj Nanda was not invited in the palace by Vasudev when he went to Mathura with Krishna? Was there any fear that Maharaj Nanda will take Krishna back with him?
I don't know the answer to that. I didn't even know that he wasn't invited into the palace. We read that in the commentary, but I didn't even know that before reading it in the commentary. So, you know, why? I don't know.
This is Hema Suryavanshi Mataji's question. It's connected. It seems very impossible to reach the goal in this lifetime. In fact, not that awareness and not endeavors to reach the goal. How can I sincerely remind myself about that every day? What's practical?
Well, just like what we're doing. We're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam every day. And we're chanting our japa every day. And in your home, you have some worship that you do. And you follow sadhana bhakti that cleanses and awakens the dormant attraction for Krishna. That's how. Follow sadhana bhakti with faith. Not just mechanically, but with faith. And like here's a Tulsi seed, and it can just stay like a Tulsi seed for a long time, but you apply some water and put it by the window, and Tulsi start to sprout. And then when they start to sprout, you put in some soil. And so, like, you know, there's a way to sprout a seed. So we're like seeds that can be sprouted, and there's a method. It's the sadhana bhakti method.
Sri Radhika Mataji's question. Can the logic of comparisons, that is, when something is compared to something else, the thing that is compared is superior, be understood by how we understand analogies from the Srimad Bhagavatam?
Well, I'm just quoting what our acharyas, multiple acharyas said. And it's probably one of the rules of nyaya. Or logic, when you say something is like something else, the something else is the standard, and that something is less than the standard, It's just, it's, I'm guessing. I'm not a scholar of Nyaya, but that's my guess.
Mataji is giving an example. Specifically, the scriptures help us understand something incomprehensible by comparing it to something within our experience.
Yes.
For instance, the spiritual master's mercy is compared to downpour of rain that extinguishes a forest fire. Am I understanding this correctly?
Yeah. Yeah. Something known. Something unknown is compared to something known. It gives, by inference, it gives us something. That's, you know, that's a particular type of, you know, yata, tata, these simile or metaphor. Go ahead.
This is Yamuna Jivan Prabhu's question. Is my understanding correct that the residents of Vrindavan have parallel relationships with the same person?
Have what kind of relationships?
Parallel.
Relationships with the same person?
For example, the feelings of awe and reverence towards the personality of Godhead Narayana and simultaneously loving parental feelings towards Krishna.
Gosh. I'm not sure what I'm contemplating is supposing somebody doesn't have any sense of divinity towards the personality of Godhead. Like, you know, for example, like the cowherd boys. Krishna shows wonderful pastimes, and what do the cowherd boys think about the wonderful pastimes? Do they contemplate his divinity? The parents, the adults, the parental affection, they're thinking that way. Are the cowherd boys thinking that way? Are the gopis thinking that way? The young gopis? There's divinity feature within Krishna, and then there's this sweetness feature within Krishna. Are they, is that, so I'm not sure his assumption is appropriate or correct with all the different rasas.
Shri Radhika Mataji's second question.
Mm.
We hear so much sadness in Lord Krishna and Lord Rama's pastimes. As a parent myself, I was moved to tears hearing Nanda Baba's words of longing for his son. My only conscious experiences from this material life, wherein separation and sadness weigh heavily on the heart. On the one hand, I long for spiritual attainment, but on the other hand, the spiritual ecstasy of separation and sadness don't present a great travel advertisement to my heart.
Yeah. What she's saying is something that Narada says when describing Krishna's departure from Vrindavan. He says something like this. This isn't a good topic to discuss with worldly people. Because when they worldly people hear it, they think, oh no, forget it. I don't want to get to that stage of love for Krishna, because I may have to undergo that terrible, terrible, painful emotion. It's best not discussed. And then he goes on discussing it for pages and pages and pages. Because this is a transcendental perspective, within that sadness, it's not sadness, it's ecstasy. But we're used to looking at things with the lens of our material experience, which is, you know, connected to her previous question. As something that's known, we're looking at something that's unknown. So we think of sadness from our experience that looks like sadness within our experience, but it's not. It's ecstasy. It's a stimulation of ecstatic love. And the description sounds horrible. But it's an ecstasy. That was the explanation that we discussed during the Ayodhya Yatra. Some persons were saying, I mean, privately to me, there's so much sadness here, I etc. But the explanation is that's an ecstasy. It's discussed in Nectar Devotion. And, you know, it takes a transcendental mood to understand it, and it takes faith to accept it. It's an ecstasy. Looks terrible. You look through our material lens, forget it, man. I'm not going to get attached to Krishna. It's like what Rupa Goswami writes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He writes, if you're at all attached to family and society and your material situation, don't go to Keshigat. Because at Keshigat, there's a little boy, his name is Gopal, and he'll steal your heart and you'll forget all that stuff. So if you're at all attached to those things, don't go there. Now, it doesn't mean that the result of going there is that you just like trash your family and society and everything. That is not what it means. But the material affinity slackens, and therefore then one carries out duty according to psychophysical nature. This is this stane statux. You stay in your position. That was Lord Chaitanya's insistence. It's what Krishna's insistence is in Bhagavad Gita. It's the Bhagavatam's message. You stay in your position. And awaken your loving attraction for Krishna, and then those things that are sad are ecstasies. It's not sadness as we know it. As long as we look through the teachings of the Bhagavatam or the pastimes of Krishna with a material lens, we're not going to understand it anyways. I mean, the previous chapters, the Govardhan Hill, gosh, it's life-threatening. That's not fun. And all they did was they just did what Krishna said, and their lives were threatened, and their cows were threatened. And one of their verses, they pray, Krishna, please protect our cows, and if you're so kind, please protect us too. Because, you know, they'll sacrifice their lives for the cows because they protect cows. Anyway, looks sad. What she's saying is correct. It looks sad, but it's not. It's ecstasy. And it's already 8:30. So last question, we're going to close up.
This is Visalaksha Prabhu. Garga Muni knows that Lord Sri Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, then Lord Narayana. Still, why is he indirectly saying to Nanda Maharaj rather than directly?
Because he's protecting Nanda Maharaj's bhava, his mood of love. And he knows his mood of love, and so he's not trampling on it. He's protecting it. One more.
Amara Mataji's question. Krishna comes to attract and reclaim the conditioned souls, but if cowherds are satisfied with him being just the son of Nanda Maharaj, how the ordinary men will get attracted? Rather, they will envy him for extraordinary powers. Can you kindly shed some light on this?
Do you understand the question? I don't. Just say, don't read it back, saying what her question is.
What I understand is, Maharaj, that Krishna comes to attract and reclaim the conditioned souls.
Yeah.
Now in the Brajavasis, Nanda Maharaj and all, they're not seeing him as Supreme Lord. They're just relating with him as,
their son.
Now from a conditioned soul's perspective, who's hearing all these pastimes, how is this, if we don't look up to him as God and just see him as one of the Brajavasis, Krishna. So people are going to only envy his supreme powers. How is it going to attract?
Read the first 9 cantos before you read the 10th canto. Because in short, the powers become clear. The all-powerful. Now, if you're going to be envious because he's all-powerful, then you're not going to go to the 10th canto. You just like close the book and walk away because of an envious heart. However, there are potencies that can help cleanse the heart through just the hearing process. And then the super attractiveness of not only the all-powerful, but the super sweet Krishna become aroused by hearing the 10th canto. The same explanation and detail, etc., is not found in, I mean, it's sprinkled in the earlier cantos, but not extolled in the way that it is in the 10th canto, the sweetness feature of Vrindavan. I think we're going to end because of time. Thank you very much. Prabhupada Ki Jai.